I wanted to ask you about your literary influences and if you think they come into your music.
Well, I think everything that you soak up relates to what you do, and whether it's just your own observations of the world or other art that you soak up, whether it's films or books or whatever. I read a lot. I don't read a book and immediately think, oh, I've got to write a song about that. Well, actually, I do. It's not true. I do. I sometimes get a bee in my bonnet about something, and I write it down as I've got to get somehow this atmosphere into a song. I read a bit of revisionist history of the bounty issue, and basically going back over all the same source material as other people that had written histories of the mutiny, and painting a vivid picture of what life was like on board ship. Oh, I love that sort of stuff anyway, because I read a lot of Patrick O'Brien, you know, the 20 book series. I love that stuff. It's Dickens with cannons, as far as I'm concerned. Love it. Roger Hall turned me onto that. I did a readers and writers panel discussion with him, and he took that up, so I went and got it. Anyway, this book, which is about the bounty, I can't even remember what it's called, it ended up with challenging the notion that Bligh was a tyrant, basically saying maybe Christian and his ilk were products of the sort of romantic era, you know, the era that sort of said you can reinvent yourself, you don't need to toe the line, you can go and live an entirely unfettered life on an island, you know, which would have been crazy to people a century before. And she gives evidence to say that Bligh was probably a really good captain. I mean, he's certainly a brilliant seaman. Everybody agrees with that. But the main thing in the book that got me was this image of some of the guys that had left the ship, that had left the bounty after the mutiny, because they didn't agree with it. They couldn't fit in Bligh's longboat, but they sort of basically left saying, look, we're still loyal to you, but we can't fit in your longboat, so we're going to stay, but we're not going to go off with Christian and the mutineers. So they went to Tahiti, and some of them became, I think all the ones that went to Tahiti became quite deeply rooted members of the community there. They took wives, they built houses, they used all their skills to benefit the local community. One of them got a full tattoo. And so I kind of invented this character who was an amalgam of a few different people, made him the ship's carpenter. And I wrote this song, which came out, which is on my first solo album, called Queen of the Night. And it was just about what happened to these guys is, after a few years, the Admiralty caught up with them, and they sent a ship out and clapped them in irons, took them back home, and some of them were hanged. This is after years, you know, just to show that British justice could not be evaded. Just that moment when the past catches up with you, and this ship, which probably looks like an alien vessel, sails into the harbour, and suddenly your life doesn't mean anything because you're about to be taken away back to your old life to be punished. I just thought that was such a strong thing, and it really resonated with me, and I don't know why, probably for subconscious reasons. So I wrote a song about it. So yeah, that's when I read a book and it ends up in a song.
And imagery is really important to you. You have some very strong and quite mixed imagery sometimes. And that strikes me as quite a literary device in a song. But you also write quite complex song structures in terms of key, changes, tempo. You move a long way. You cover a lot of territory musically in a song.
That's why I don't sell many records.
It doesn't bother you in the slightest, though, does it?
I'm a pop songwriter, and so I'm interested in the idea of writing something that's really concise and that really captures an idea. But when I write something that's really, really, really facile, I get a bit bored with it, and I'm quite a slow writer, so I don't sort of finish something and immediately record it and then get it out there. I tend to see things lie around for a while. I take a while to teach things to a band to play, so I tend to edit out those ideas which are really sort of easy to catch. And what I've ended up with is probably I'm on the unpopular edges of a popular field, I think sometimes really interesting things happen out at the edges of any particular field, and I'm really happy where I am. The songs that I really like, I like some really mainstream songs. I really admire them, and I admire how precise and they are, and how little fat there is on them. I love that, but I've very rarely achieved that myself, you know.
One thing that I was also struck with was you keep journals, and you have for a very, very long time, and you archive them. I wanted to ask you, as a musician, in terms of libraries and public art and archives and things like that, are you a user of those kind of services, libraries in particular?
Yeah, I am. I go to libraries a lot. I research my stuff. I wrote a song on first solo album called Toy Factory Fire, which was sort of got started by a book by Naomi Klein called No Logo, and she tells that story. Tells that story of the industrial fire in Thailand.
That's a horrific song, and I don't mean that in a bad way. The story is horrific, but it's beautifully done.
Thank you. I had ideas for that song, and there were all kinds of things which could have been pitfalls. It could have turned into a slogan sort of song, but in the end, it was better to make it not a protest song, because the world doesn't need any more bad protest songs. There's a lot of really bad ones out there. But what it ended up was more of a kind of sort of a meditation on the event, which lays out the history, skews it in a sort of strange way, because one of the big issues of that song was to try and work out who was singing, and that's something that's common to a lot of songwriters. You'll have a story, you'll have an emotional kind of palette, like a set of colours that are emotional colours that you want to work with. Maybe you'll have a bit of a fragment of melody which will suggest a kind of an emotional feeling to the song. But you've got to work out who the character is. Who's singing? Why are they singing? You know, what's led them up to that point? And sometimes you can have a song, and then at the last minute you switch it from a he/she song to an I/you song, or switch the gender over and have the woman sing back to the man. All those sorts of things can be suddenly the revelation point. And with Toy Factory Fire, what happened to me was that the song started to work for me was when I decided that the character who was singing was a guy who actually benefited from the fire, obliquely, because he was a publicist for a big toy company based in New York, and that had the twofold thing of making him a kind of unreliable narrator. So he was able to say his piece and reveal stuff that he wasn't even aware of, perhaps. But it also it also helped the song, I think, because it made him more like me, you know. And I think that's a key. I mean, if I'd written the song and from the point of view of a corrupt Thai factory owner, you know, who's so far away from my life and my experience, I would have had a harder job making it resonate, making it real.
And one thing you did make resonate and make real, very real tonight, was this guitar that you played, a lovely guitar. 1930s, I think you said, mail order?
Yeah. It's a Harmony. It's an old, it's like a cowboy guitar. If you're growing up in the 60s, you might have seen the Bobby Gentry show on TV. And Bobby Gentry is a big, tall woman who had this guitar which was so small that she didn't use a strap. She tucked it under one elbow and she strummed away, and she didn't use a pick. She just strummed with her fingers. And this guitar is a little bit like that. It's not a loud one, but it's been my only acoustic guitar for years and years and years.
And you bought it in Christchurch?
Bought it in Christchurch at a music shop, and the guy told me that a musician in an Irish band had only just brought it in a couple of days before, and he'd run out of money and sold it to buy food or something.
Thank you so much for your time. Very generous. Thank you. Cheers.